968, People Against Romero. Mr. Huff, do you have any questions about our procedures? You may begin.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Joseph Huff. My registration number is 34384, and I represent Mr. Anthony Romero. I want to just say that I've been up here quite a few times, and this court hears a lot of close cases. But this, in my opinion, isn't even a close case. This, to me, in my career, is one of the most clear-cut, harmful errors that I've ever seen. It's clear in this case that Mr. Romero should have been given that provocation instruction. And why the court in this case would have found that self-defense was appropriate, which, if successful, acts as a complete bar to liability, but that for some reason provocation wasn't warranted in this case, I cannot understand that. I've been trying to think how that could be rational, how that could logically work, but it just doesn't for me, particularly under these facts. Now, I want to start off with saying that the prosecution, or Mr. Lee's main contention is that Mr. Romero shouldn't get provocation because it wasn't sudden enough, the attack with the lamp, that he should have expected it, that it wasn't immediate enough, unexpected or unforeseen or immediate. But I want to tell the court that in my reply brief, I listed at least 12 different times in the opening statement and closing arguments where defense counsel said, look, he wasn't expecting to go over there and get in a fight. He was expecting to go over there. He might have to yell at the guy. He might have to threaten the guy. But he went over there for the primary purpose of talking about that earlier drug deal and trying to get his money back. He didn't go over there for the purposes of stabbing the victim in this case. And the jury even found that because they acquitted him of burglary, which means that they found that when he entered the victim's home, he didn't have the intent.
Oh, not necessarily so, Mr. Huff. They might conclude that he was invited in, that he didn't enter without authority.
Well, that could be true. But the point is, this, just like that analysis, is a jury question. The jury should have been allowed to determine whether this was heat of passion or not. And it is definitely a viable question up for debate.
Let me interrupt you. Yes, you're saying defense counsel in his opening statement said what he said, but of course it's not evidence.
Sure.
And the question here was there evidence at the trial that this was unexpected or unforeseen? And you would agree that in order for your client to have gotten the instruction, it would have necessarily have to have been unexpected or unforeseen. The lamp, the striking with
right.
The lamp.
And I don't think anyone could have foreseen this particular assault. Now, perhaps under some circumstances, you could see that if you went into someone's house, they're going to attack you. But I don't think that anyone necessarily thinks they're going to get hit over the head with a lamp, assaulted with an instrument. And I don't think Mr. Romero had any clue that that was going to happen either.
When you went into the home of a drug dealer and confronted him about an unhappy drug deal and that there might be a fight, but it wouldn't be expected.
I'm sure it was on his mind that there could be an altercation, but the point is, was the hitting over the head with a lamp attacking him, did he know that was going to happen? And it's clear from the evidence that he did not know that was going to happen. He repeatedly stated, look, I went in there to discuss the drug deal. He hit me over the head with a lamp, and then I took out my knife. He didn't have his knife ready to go when he went into the apartment.
Mr. Huff, what does the record show about Mr. Romero's bringing the knife with him? Was that because... does it show that he brought the knife because he thought that there might be some kind of altercation or confrontation?
You know,
or did he just carry it around or happen to have it with him on that day?
From what I recall, he just is the type of guy that carries a knife around. But I can't say that for sure. I don't remember that part of the record. I'm not sure that was even brought up.
Well, to follow up on your comment a few minutes ago about whether or not in order to obtain a provocation instruction, the defendant has to anticipate what's going to happen. Is it necessary that he would have needed to have anticipated specifically getting hit by a lamp as opposed to generally thinking that there might be some kind of altercation?
I don't necessarily think he needed to anticipate the exact means by which he would be assaulted, but I think he had to anticipate being assaulted. And the evidence shows that he didn't, unlike the Valdez case, which Mr. Lee relies on, he didn't want to provoke an incident. He just went there to get his money back. He wasn't looking for a fight. Like I said, according to his testimony, he didn't go into the home with a knife drawn. He only took it out after he was first assaulted.
So if I can ask you, and maybe I'm just not understanding your distinction of Valdez. Valdez, as I recall, it says heat of passion is inapplicable when the defendant seeks out the highly provoking act.
Right.
Now, in Valdez, it happened to be, I'm going to go find my estranged wife in bed with the boyfriend, and he knew that was likely. But, you know, what's here, you know, what's the provoking act, right? I mean, he expected some possible pushback, I assume, from the victim. The testimony was, I was going to have to yell at him a bit, and maybe threaten him or yell at him a little bit, and I thought maybe there may be even, we'd have to fight. It was going to come to a fight, and that's what the total, in my mind, that was the total of it. Why doesn't that, you know, at least get you to the same place as Valdez? He went there, you know, with knowledge, and kind of seeking out the provoking act. I expected maybe I'm going to fight.
Mr. Valdez went looking for a fight.
What's the basis for that in Valdez? He went to kind of see if his wife was going to be in bed with the boyfriend. I didn't say he was expecting, you know.
Well, what he did was he went to the home. He saw the boyfriend's truck out there, and he went and hid in the house. And then he went and retrieved some weapons, went up to the bedroom where they were, and proceeded to stab the guy. That, in my mind, is completely different from what happened here. Mr. Valdez took a number of intentional, deliberative steps over a long period of time for the very purpose of facilitating the stabbing. Mr. Romero didn't want to stab anyone. He only stabbed in quasi-self-defense. The jury didn't necessarily see it that way, but they very well could have seen it as a provoking act by the victim. And that's the difference here. I think it's...
So where the provoking act is what, then? Maybe that's what I'm not catching.
The provoking act was Mr. Martinez smashing a lamp over Mr. Romero's head when he went into his trailer house.
And does it matter, in terms of sequentially, does it matter that they were already fighting at the time he went and got a lamp? I mean, I think that's undisputed. They started fighting in the doorway and found their way
in.
Well,
I think the jury could find that just a simple fight wouldn't justify Mr. Romero pulling out a knife. However, once Mr. Martinez brought in a lamp, an instrument, clubbed him over the head with it, that, yeah, he was acting under the heat of passion when he withdrew his knife and stabbed him.
Is that enough? I mean, it appears to me that the only evidence of heat of passion is a lamp upside the head.
Yes, sir.
I don't perceive anything else in the record other than lamp upside the head, therefore passion.
Well, the fight that started is part of it. The fact that this guy was high on cocaine and alcohol is part of it. The fact that he had a cocaine...
This guy being the victim.
And the fact that, yes, he took a lamp and smashed it over my client's head. And the jury was not allowed to determine whether they felt that that was enough to get to decide that it was heat of passion or not. And the case law is very clear. It says... Some evidence, regardless of how incredible, unreasonable, improbable, or slight, I would argue this goes well beyond any of that. Everybody agreed. The victim smashed my guy over the head with a lamp. And after that point, he took out his knife and stabbed the guy. I think that's plenty in and of itself for the jury to decide, hey, wait a minute, maybe this was heat of passion. We don't think it was quite reasonable enough to be self-defense, but we think, yeah, it was a provoking act by the victim, and so, yeah, it's heat of passion.
Is it part of your argument that this would have shifted the burden to disprove heat of passion?
Exactly. The prosecution would have had to disprove the presence of heat of passion beyond a reasonable doubt. And Judge Gabriel, you mentioned it, and Mr. Lee makes much of the fact that at some point in this lengthy interview with police, Mr. Romero says, yeah, I thought it might come to that it might come to a fight. But it's very clear, if you read that whole colloquy that they have, he repeats over and over, I didn't go over there for the purpose of getting in this altercation. I thought I might have to yell at him. I thought I might have to threaten him. We might get into a fight, but I just wanted to get my money back. That's all he wanted. And I think that the fact that the victim didn't get up there and testify at all, he was MIA, he refused to testify, he got held in contempt for that, who knows why. But I think based upon the fact that all we have is Mr. Romero's statements coming in saying, I just went over there to set things right, I thought I might have to yell at him, maybe we would get into a fight, but I wasn't assured of that, I think that's plenty to get heated passion to the jury.
So your distinction of Valdez, and I think I'm tracking with that, I just want to make sure. What you say in Valdez, the defendant there argued that the provocation was finding my wife in bed with this boyfriend. He knew before he got there that's what he was going to find, and he was armed already. You know, he armed himself with a steel pipe and a knife, and so your position on Valdez is there. The guy, he went to the provocation and now is trying to rely on what he expected to justify him stabbing this guy.
Mr. Valdez orchestrated a situation in which he would stab another human being.
He knew he was going to find the provocation. It wasn't sudden and unexpected. It was
absolutely
fully expected.
He had been there for a while in the basement, knowing the boyfriend was up there with his wife. Here, my guy walks in to talk about the earlier drug deal. They get into a fight, and he gets hit over the head with a lamp.
And what you're saying is,
if that was going to happen, he would have had his knife out to begin with.
And what you're saying is, it's different than Valdez, because he didn't expect to have to use his knife, and didn't create a situation that would justify him using the knife.
Right.
Unlike in Valdez, where the guy went knowing he was going to have an excuse to use the knife. He kind of
if in Valdez, the guy walks in and sees the wife in bed with the boyfriend, and the boyfriend strikes Valdez, then yeah, I could see getting a heat of passion.
Or it would have been a heat of passion if he walked in not knowing he was going to find the boyfriend there and then went ballistic.
That would probably be sufficient for heat of passion.
Right. And here what you're saying is the defendant, your client, did not go to any provocation, even though he kind of knew there might be a tense situation and an argument. That's not...
Exactly. He knew that they might have to get into a fight, but he didn't know that that was certain. And like I said, had he known that he was going to be assaulted with some sort of implement, he would have had the knife ready to go. He didn't know that. He just went there. He just wanted his money. Client doesn't want to be sitting in prison for 32 years. He didn't want this to happen. He just is a druggie who wanted to get his money back. He didn't go over there for the purpose of killing somebody or assaulting somebody like Mr. Valdez did. Mr. Valdez wanted to assault that guy. He knew he was there. He knew what was going to happen. My client didn't. He just wanted to get his money back, and instead he got a lamp upside the head.
And what he said to the officer, and you put it in your reply brief, he pulled that lamp out, I'll pull mine out, I gotta pull something out too. I mean, that, how does that demonstrate any passion, any heat of passion? It sounds essentially like, there's an escalation here, and so...
Well, it's a jury question. The prosecutor was free to argue that. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't self-defense, and this isn't heat of passion. But there was certainly enough evidence here to get that question to the jury, at least, and that's what I'm arguing. I'm not addressing the issue of, you know, what the jury would have done had it been given this instruction. I'm just saying the court erred by not giving the instruction in the first place so that the jury could have the ability to find this if they thought it was appropriate. Obviously, they were fairly sympathetic to Mr. Romero because they acquitted him of everything.
So under your theory, then, if there's a fight and one fellow pulls a weapon and the other then pulls his weapon, then you always get a heat of passion instruction.
Under some circumstances, I think that it's certainly a jury question. And in this case, where it was not expected that they were going to come to fisticuffs, that yes, the jury should be allowed to determine whether the smashing of the lamp constituted heat of passion that would have mitigated the stabbing. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal, if okay. Thank you.
Thank you, and may it please the court, John Lee on behalf of the people, bar number 38141. Three considerations independently resolve this case. First, as Valdez makes clear, a defendant is not entitled to the provocation mitigator when there's undisputed evidence that he knowingly put himself into the provoking situation. Second, there was just no evidence presented in this case that the defendant was in fact acting in the heat of passion. Provocation requires not just evidence supporting a conclusion that the victim did an adequately objective provoking act, but it requires that the defendant in fact was acting in the heat of passion in response to that act. And third, even assuming the defendant should have gotten the instruction, any error was harmless because there's no way a reasonable jury would have concluded, based on this record, that he was acting under the heat of passion. With respect to the first point, we believe that the principle announced in Valdez applies to bar the assertion of the provocation mitigator in cases where the undisputed evidence shows that the defendant knowingly put himself in the provoking situation.
Mr. Lee, what is your response then to Mr. Hoff's contention that he was just going there to recover his drug money and he thought that there might be some kind of confrontation, but he didn't expect to get hit by a lamp?
I think that's the, well, let me answer that in two ways. First, I think defense counsel conceded that he did expect the possibility of a fight. I think his contention is that he didn't necessarily intend there to be a fight. And I think that's the wrong question. As Valdez makes clear, the issue is whether the defendant, as required by the statutory language, foresaw the possibility of the provoking situation. And I think here,
at least... Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Lee, but obviously this point is important to me, as Mr. Huff found out. Valdez says the statute doesn't apply when a person intentionally seeks out the highly provoking act in question. I guess there's a possible distinction, I'd like you to address this, between seeking out the highly provoking act in question, which here is getting knocked over the head with a lamp, I suppose, versus, you know, anticipating a possible fight. I don't think anyone would deny there was substantial evidence that there was a possible fight and an aggressive situation here. But the real issue is whether Mr. Romero sought out a highly provoking act. In Valdez, that was clear. The provoking act was finding my wife in bed with the boyfriend. He knew what he was going to find. He sought it out. Here, I think it's a tougher case. So you've said now a couple of times, why I interrupted you, you said a couple of times it was kind of going to that provoking situation. And I think Valdez arguably requires more than that. So perhaps you can address that.
Absolutely. First, I would say that independent of Valdez, it was just interpretation of the statute. And the statute says sudden. And as the Valdez court explained, sudden means unexpected, unforeseen, and immediate. So my intention in this case is, what the rule requires, and I think this is the only way it's workable, is in cases where the defendant foresaw the basis for what he's later claiming provocation. And I think this case elucidates that principle. In this case, I don't think there's an argument that there's something special about the lamp that caused him to be provoked. It was evidence like, oh, that's a lava lamp. Those are so rare. How dare you? I'm going to attack you. It was the physical contact. It was the fact that they were fighting and they got hit with a lamp. And it's our contention that when you go over and you've acknowledged the possibility that there was going to be a fight, that's just something that goes along with being a fight. And the rule would not work if it required that kind of precision, be it if I got hit with a right fist when I only expected a left fist, or if I got kicked in the shin when I thought I was going to get hit in the eye. That just leads to an unworkable rule. I think the question is whether what you're claiming provoked you was foreseeable, and whether the uncontroverted evidence establishes such. And I think this is one of those rare cases where it does. The defendant knew it was going to be a fight. I think Mr. Huff said as much, that he thought there was at least a possibility of a fight. Whether or not he wanted there to be a fight, I think, is irrelevant to whether or not he falls under the statutory language.
So let me just clarify. I think I understand what you're saying. So you're focused on the statute. You said it requires a sudden heat of passion, and your position is, since he expected at least the possibility of a fight or an aggressive situation, it was not sudden.
Certainly it was foreseen, so therefore it was not sudden.
Okay, thank you.
I just make one last point on that. I think not only is that consonant with the words that General Assembly chose when they picked the word sudden. Because, for example, they didn't use the words like immediate loss of self-control. I mean, sudden is a broader term. It's more than just a temporal limitation. It means, I think, both immediate and unforeseen. And also, when you think about the broader context of provocation, it's essentially a value judgment. Because this, you were so consumed with passion, you were unable to fully consider or control what you did next. But someone who knowingly puts themselves into the provoking situation, they were given that opportunity. They did consider their actions. They were able, at least to some degree, to control it. So I think, as a whole, we can say something?
Yes, I was going to ask you, along the lines of what you're saying, Mr. Lee, part of the statutory language for the heat of provocation mitigator is that there has to be action that's not only sudden, but sufficient to excite an irresistible passion in a reasonable person. So is part of what you're saying is that this these circumstances were not sufficient to excite an irresistible passion?
I don't know if I'd go that far. I think in some circumstances, getting hit in the head with a lamp would be sufficient to excite an irresistible passion in a person. But given that it requires evidence of each element, I would certainly not concede that all the elements were met in this case. In particular, there's absolutely no evidence presented that the defendant was actually acting under the heat of passion. And I think on that ground, the defendant's claim is facially insufficient in that his contention is he was entitled to the instruction because there's evidence that the victim did something to him, irrespective of whether he in fact acted under heat of passion. The statutory language requires that there has to be actual evidence that you were acting under the heat of passion. Looking at the cases where they actually found provocation, those present completely different records than what we have here. I think in Fenny, there's evidence that the actions were due to uncontrollable pent-up anger. In Rose, the defendant testified he just lost it. He freaked out. And even in Suazo, the defendant testified that he was very angry. He was very upset. In this case, there's absolutely no evidence about the defendant's state of mind. I think as some of this court's earlier comments pointed out, if anything, the record established that the defendant acted in reasoned self-defense.
And your argument is this is an abuse of discretion standard on review.
Absolutely. And I guess there was a little bit of a dispute in the briefs of whether constitutional harmless or harmless error would apply. It's certainly our contention that it would be harmless error. A defendant has no right. The General Assembly could take away provocation and it wouldn't offend the Constitution. So certainly the right to provocation itself wouldn't trigger constitutional harmless. The defendant's argument, as I understand it, is that provocation is like an element, so therefore it's constitutional harmless because it triggers the people's burden to prove the elements of the underlying offense. I think cases like Roe and Villarreal and Suazo have all said that that's not the case. It's not an element of the offense. So under that, I would argue that certainly there's no constitutional basis for constitutional harmless to apply. And the court has no further questions. And she's from judgment of the court below. Thank you.
Elf, would you give Mr. Lee an extra minute?
Mr. Huff?
Mr. Huff, I'm sorry. Mr. Lee didn't use all his time, so we'll transfer it over.
What I want to say is that this is a jury question. We can all sit here and disagree all day long about whether this amounted to self-defense or whether this amounted to heat of passion, or did the prosecution sufficiently disprove heat of passion? Was he surprised? Was it sufficient enough? The problem is, it's a jury question. The jury should have been allowed to weigh in on this.
Let me interrupt you there. What we're looking at is whether the judge made an appropriate decision on this record. Is it your view that we review this as an abuse of discretion or that we review it de novo?
I think you should review it de novo, and I think the Attorney General actually concedes that this is de novo review on page 6 of their brief. They say whether the defense has submitted sufficient evidence to get a provocation instruction is a question of law reviewed de novo. I think it's de novo for that reason. I also think it's de novo because it implicates the defendant's due process rights, and therefore those issues are reviewed de novo. So
if we are then reviewing de novo, and the question before us is, Is there sufficient evidence upon which a jury could find heat of passion? Is that the right question?
No, I don't think it is, respectfully. The question is whether there was enough evidence, unreasonably incredible or slight, that this should have gone to the jury. In other words, this court is not sitting here to decide whether or not this was heat of passion, right, or whether the prosecution disproved it, but whether it was sufficient to go to the jury. And that's where you just have to have the scintilla of defensive evidence showing that it was heat of passion.
Scintilla of evidence of heat of passion.
Right.
And your argument is the scintilla is the attack with the lamp on the head. That is the scintilla.
It's more than a scintilla in my view.
It is at least a scintilla.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case of People Against Romero stands submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course. That completes our docket for this afternoon. Accordingly, Division 1 is adjourned until the next call.